This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yerkew and Peter Scoop Stanton. This is the radio show that will break your neck if your neck needs breaking. And here are the hosts of 7-5 Radio, Walter Yerkew, star of the biggest documentary movie ever made, The 7-5, and Peter Scoop Stanton, who starred in To Catch a Predator.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, one and all. This is 7-5 Radio on the Liberty News Radio Network. You can check us out at 75radio.org, 75radio.org. And with me, as always, my good friend and partner in crime, Walter Yerkew. Walter, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. It's still winter. It sucks, but I'm doing okay anyway.
Right. Well, here in our nation's capital, they're predicting a couple inches of snow, and the stores are just mobbed. You think it's a Y2K all over again. But we are live. It is Saturday, January 30th, 2021. If you want to, you can call us live at 866-986-6397. That's 866-986-NEWS. First order of business, we always want to remember the members of the law enforcement community that were murdered in the line of duty. Fortunately, this week, we have no names to read off. Now, tonight, we have a very special guest. I'm going to hand the reins over to Mr. Yerkew. He can introduce our guest and get it rolling. Walter, take it away, sir.
All right, man. If it wasn't for social media, I never would have met this gentleman or gotten to know him. I knew his story before because I've seen it on television. I consider him a close friend, a personal friend, and we met for dinner, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. I had to go up to New York, and we went out to a nice place, and I was really comfortable speaking with this man. His name is Joe Lizzito, and he is a man of heroism, and he's done something in his life that we're going to talk about in a little bit that not many people do. Not many people do. One in particular we know doesn't do it. And we'll get to that guy in his name in a little while also. Now, everybody knows that listens to our radio show. We are 100% pro-cop. We are not 99.9% pro-cop. And you can't be more than 100% pro-cop. We are 100% pro-cop, except in the occasions where we deal with cowards, murderers, things like that. I've done what I did, paid my dues. I think I'm good to go. I think I've paid my dues. My partner, Scoop, has paid his dues as well. And we're going to introduce Joe Lizzito to the program. How you doing, Joe?
Oh, Walter, thank you for that intro. I don't know if I deserve it, but I really appreciate that, my friend. Thank you.
Oh, Joe, you're more than welcome. I was talking to Scoop earlier, and you know, I told him, I said, Joe is the ultimate middle class, hardworking family man. Almost textbook. And you married your high school sweetheart, did you not?
No, I met her while she was in high school. I was in college, and we went to her prom. But I'm 4 years older than her, so we're from different towns. But we've been together since 1992, so may as well have been high school, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you were her high school sweetheart, right? You just weren't in high school anymore. wonderful lady, you know, I see her posting all the time, and we compliment each other's posts on occasion, as I do with you. Pictures of your two boys, you got one in college, one still in high school.
Yes, sir.
You know, you live in, you know, Long Island, you know, generally a middle class area. There's not much, let's say, about Joe. He's a hardworking guy. travels from Long Island to New York every day on a subway, provides for his family, loves the Islanders, loves the Buffalo Bills. Sorry about the Bills. I was pulling for him last week, but, they just didn't show up.
Not at all.
And I'm a Jet fan. They never show up. So, I'm used to it. Joe, can you just give us a little bit about your background, and then we'll get to the juicy stuff.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I appreciate what you said, because I've always said that, and even in my my social media bios, I just call myself just a guy with one good story, because I just look at myself as what you said, like just an average guy, a blue collar guy. I was raised by my parents, and, for the longest time, my mom didn't work. My dad worked two jobs. I think I get my work ethic from him and my grandparents and stuff. And it's always been something that I've taken pride in, that where, nowadays anyway, the last 10, 20 years, whatever, I think both parents will work, husband and wives work, but I'm still very old fashioned. And even though my wife works and everything else, I kind of feel like I'm the patriarch. It's my responsibility. And I still have an old fashioned way of looking at things. And I'm just me. Like, I always tell people, like, I'm a pretty boring person, to be honest with you. I just have one good story, and that's it. So my background is really just, I grew up in New York. I was born in 1970, grew up in Queens, went to school, high school, didn't do anything special, got good grades. Education was always important to me. So I always took pride in my academics. And, I met Andrea. We ended up getting married. A few years later, we moved to Philadelphia, lived there for 10 years. And then 10 years ago, we came back to the island after everything happened that we're going to get into. But, pretty nondescript. I just keep my head down and just live day to day.
Yeah, keep your head down, but your eyes open.
That's the thing. There's nothing spectacular about me. I'm just an average guy, and it's mm-hmm. like I said, if it wasn't for the incident that we're going to talk about, there's really nothing above average. I just, I really only care about my family, and that's it. So just like I said, I live for them and go from there.
And I forgot to mention that Joe is a big fan of MMA. And there's a picture of him with the one and only Dana White, the president and CEO of, that's a picture, man. That's a good picture. I only got to see him from a distance once. Couldn't get near him.
I will say that after everything that happened, and then again, we'll get into that. A lot of people and organizations involved with New York City turned their back on me. But a lot of other people and organizations didn't, and UFC and Dana White, what they did for myself and my family, they were great.
Okay, we're coming up on our first break, and right after this break is over, we're going to get into February 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
All right, this is 75 Radio on the Liberty News Radio Network. Check us out, 75radio.org. Take it away, boys.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Well, it's just not working.
She's been very unrealistic.
Really?
Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
That's not true.
We were supposed to live happily ever after.
Now, this isn't a fairy tale.
At first, he was gallant and chivalrous, opening doors for me, holding my chair, taking my arm.
All right, I'm not as young as I used to be.
He simply isn't the man who swept me off my feet.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Mr. Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand when you're together.
Really?
Yes, try it.
Okay.
All right,
go on, take her hand. Careful, little Laura.
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, look into each other's eyes. That's right, raise your visor.
Oh, they're blue, dear.
Yeah.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march. That is why we pray. And that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
You're back, and Scoop is just getting back from posting insults on Twitter. This is still 7-5 Radio.
All right, we are back. I was I wish I could post insults on Twitter, but Twitter kicked me off. I was connecting with our guest, Joe Lazito, on Indeed. But anyways, we are live. It is Saturday, January 30th, 2021. Call us live at 866-986-NEWS, 866-986-NEWS. Walter, please take away.
All right. I'm going to set the stage this for this interview with my friend Joe. February 11th, 2011, there was a Ukrainian immigrant, been living in the country about 20 years or so, and he thought he was a wise guy, tough guy, drug dealer, street guy, you know, you name it. He thought that's what he thought he was, but he really wasn't. And when you're really not, nobody is afraid of you. And really, nobody was afraid of this guy. On the morning of February 11th, he had gotten into an argument with his mother in Brooklyn and ended up stabbing and killing his stepfather. Now, he had a girl that he loved but didn't love him back, and he went looking for her. Ended up killing her mom when he got to her house. When he leaves her house, he sees her coming down the street, whacks her, jumps in a car. Now, I'm skipping a lot of detail. Jumps in a car, hijacks a car, jumps in a car, runs over an innocent bystander and kills him. And is headed out of New York City. He heads out of New York City as far as getting across the bridge. He's not even in New York State anymore. What does he do? He turns around and comes back. Why? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Cut the long story, make it just a little bit shorter so I can get Joe on the air, is this guy knows the following morning, February 12th, it's in the newspaper. He's wanted. His picture is in the paper. And he's not only killed four people by that time, but he stabbed a few others. And, well, he's on a run. He's hiding. He's running through the subway tunnels like he did when he was a kid. Because everybody in the neighborhood knows where all how to get crossed down real quick. Well, he jumps on the train. And he's on the train. The train is full of people. It's in the morning. People going to work. People going to work. By the time the newspapers came out on the morning of the 12th, it's, you know, you really don't know unless you bought a newspaper and you're reading it on the platform or on the train itself. I remember I used to take the train. I used to either doze off or read the paper or both because there wasn't nothing interesting in the paper. But February 12th, there was something interesting in the paper. And now, Joe, did you read anything about this in the newspaper? Did you see a paper that morning?
Well, no, I did not, because at the time I was living in Philadelphia. So while it was news here in New York, it hadn't yet made it down to the Philadelphia papers yet. And because it was a Saturday morning, a lot of times the papers didn't get to the newsstand as early as they would, say, during the week. And the train I took out of New Jersey to get up to New York that day, they hadn't received their newspapers yet. Normally, I would get a New York Post and a Philadelphia Daily News and read that up there. And I did get those that day. So, yes, I guess technically I did read the paper, but because it's like the super early edition, there was nothing in there about what had gone on the prior, you know, 24 hours. So I went up to New York that day like it was any other day.
And, you know, you've been asked this 1,000 times about what happened that morning. And so I got to hand it to you. Every time I've seen a different article that you put out or in your book, and we'll get to your book, you know, towards the end of the show about where people can get it and stuff. How did it start? How did it happen? How did you know? What did you think? What was going through your mind? You know, I'm going to wrap all those questions into one. How in the hell did you? I can't find the words. I'm so excited about talking to you on the air like this. Finally, how did you find the chutzpah? How did you find the chutzpah to realize what was going on and jump in?
Well, I mean, first of all, Walter, you're a very good friend of mine, and it's humbling that you guys would want to have me on. I'm really grateful for that and to give me the opportunity to tell the story. I tell people all the time it wasn't anything I had time to even decide. To be honest, he attacked me. So the only decision I had to make was, do I try to fight back and maybe die, or do I just cover up and turtle and hope he doesn't kill me? And, you know, again, it wasn't anything I consciously thought about, even though those are my two choices. It was just my instinct to fight. You know, like I said, my dad, I got my work ethic from my dad. And, you know, my dad is straight off the boat from Italy. And, you know, he was a typical punk teenager and everything. He got into his share of scraps. And, you know, he always did well for himself. And I never did that. I had never really been in a fight, maybe outside of hockey, but never really in the street, but I guess it was just maybe from, you know, something I got from my dad or from watching all the MMA over the years. I don't know, but it was just sort of instinctive. And I just went back at him because I didn't want to die. And I knew that if I didn't at least fight back, I would definitely be dead.
Because, you know, this guy was a lunatic. He was a lunatic when he was on drugs. He was a lunatic when he was off drugs. You know, he had a history with the NYPD for getting into trouble and into fights and burglaries and drug dealing and things like that. He paid some kid to drive him around and called him his driver, you know, like he was Tony Soprano, this guy, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's probably where he got the idea of getting a driver because, you know, Tony had a driver all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when you try to model yourself over a TV character, it just don't work out in a script like you planned. You know, he ended up on the subway and he's trying to hide and you and him and, well, one other guy. And if you want to mention that guy in blue by name, be my guest. If you just want to refer to him as that guy, you know, I'm cool with that, too, because everybody that reads your book or anybody that pulls up your story or Google's Max's name, sing that cop's name. And when you were fighting with this guy, where was your supposed help?
Well, I don't mind saying his name. And actually, whenever anyone asks me about certain things about the case and how, you know, I'll never have the opportunity to really ever go to court with it, I always say my one recourse is talking about it. And, you know, like I said, I appreciate you having me on to spread the word about my story. So I definitely will mention his name because I think it's a very important piece of the story because my sister is a retired New York City police officer. We have other retired New York City police officers in our family. I'm friends with them, NYPD. I mean, you're NYPD. Mike was NYPD. You know, and I don't think all people in any field are good people, but I know enough good people that were police that I think when you have someone like Terrence Howell, who is an embarrassment to the badge and an embarrassment to the position, for someone like myself, it's best that I do mention his name because he needs to be made an example out of. So I think if people wanted to Google Terrence Howell, they'll get a feel for what kind of a guy he was, even though the NYPD did see fit to give him an award for bravery, which is something I still don't quite get, right. But...
All right. Hold it right there, gentlemen. We're coming on our second break. We're just getting warmed up. We are live with Joe Lizzito. Stay tuned, everybody. This is 75 Radio on Liberty News Radio Network. Take it away, boys.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
A new order from the Centers for Disease Control will require those traveling on nearly all forms of public transportation to wear a face mask as officials try to slow down the spread of the coronavirus. The order, which goes into effect Tuesday morning, calls on all travelers on public conveyances, including airplanes, buses, trains, ferries, taxis, and rideshares, to mask up. The order will also extend to airports, train, and bus stations. The order coming as the U.S. passes 26 million coronavirus infections reported since the beginning of the pandemic. Maryland is also confirming a case of the more contagious strain of the virus first identified in South Africa. In a statement, Governor Larry Hogan's office said that the patient is an adult living in the Baltimore metro area who hadn't traveled internationally, making community transmission likely. The first case of the South African strain in the U.S. was identified earlier this week in South Carolina. And the South Carolina Republican Party has voted to censure Congressman Tom Rice for his vote to impeach former President Donald Trump. This is USA Radio News.
Welcome to Tax Talk with Hollywood legend Bob Eubanks.
You know, as part of Hollywood for a long time, I've seen my fair share of celebrities get in trouble with the IRS. Well, there's one name I trust, the Tax Defense Group. They're the most trusted name in tax. So if you owe more than $10,000 to the IRS, you really need to call my friends at the Tax Defense Group. Ignoring the IRS is not the solution. They can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, seize your home or business. But the Tax Defense Group could put a stop to all of that and tailor a program that would reduce your tax debt to pennies on the dollar. You gotta love that. So don't just take my word for it. Call them. Find out for yourself. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And they're open 24 hours a day because they know that tax debt doesn't sleep either.
Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis from the most trusted name in tax. Call 800-832-1594. 800-832-1594.
A pair of Ohio lawmakers are proposing a day to honor former President Trump in the state. Mike Fortier has that story.
Two state lawmakers proposing a bill to name June 14th, Trump's birthday, as President Donald J. Trump Day in Ohio. State Reps John Cross and Reggie Stoltzfus emailing colleagues Friday looking for co-sponsors of the bill. They say the bill will celebrate one of the greatest presidents in American history, and it will show the more than 3 million Ohioans that voted for Trump that the legislature recognizes his accomplishments. As you can imagine, not everyone is on board with this. Democratic State Rep. Jeff Crossman tells the Columbus Dispatch he thinks it's disrespectful because June 14th is already Flag Day, a federal holiday. For USA Radio News, I'm Mike Fortier.
Congressman Stephen Lynch has tested positive for COVID-19 after receiving his second dose of Pfizer vaccine. His office says the Massachusetts Democrat received the second shot earlier this month. In a statement, Pfizer has said that it could take up to 7 days for protection from the second dose to take effect. This is USA Radio News.
Wow, you're still listening? Here's more 7-5 Radio.
They better be listening. We are talking live with Joe Lizzito, dealing with a nut job that was looking to take his life and lives of anybody he came across. Guys, please continue.
All right, Joe. We have, you know, we're on the train, and set the scene and tell us how it progressed, please.
Yeah, so basically, I got on the train and was waiting for it to move, and we didn't move right away. Door stayed open. Two police officers got on the train, Terrence Howell and Tamara Taylor. And normally when police get on the subway, at least from what I've seen, they stay in the body of the subway car and they go station to station like everyone else. So what these two did was they walked right in with the motorman, and I was sitting basically right behind the motorman, separated by a wall. Doors eventually close. We start moving really, really slow, like a crawl. And it sort of seemed weird to me, but it was a Saturday morning. I figured, I don't know, maybe the motorman's hungover or something. I don't know. But next thing I know, this guy comes and he starts banging on the door. And, you know, if you've been on the subway before, there's a small window that you can see in and out of the motorman's compartment, and the motorman can see into the car. So the guy banging on the door says, "Let me in." So the voice on the other side of the door says, "Who are you?" And the guy on my side says, "I'm the police." And the voice on the other side of the door says, "You're not the police." And with that, Maxim Gelman, who's on my side of the car, he goes and sits down. Now, what's important to know is Maxim Gelman doesn't know that he's actually speaking to the police. He thinks he's speaking to the motorman.
Right.
So with that, Gelman goes and sits down. And there was a gentleman that was standing next to me. He then went to the door, but he looks panicked. He's trying his hardest to get the police to come out. He obviously saw the police go in there. He obviously, which I figured out after the fact, obviously knew who Maxim Gelman was and realizes he's in a dangerous situation because he obviously knows what's going on. I'm the only one on the train, I think, that day that didn't know what he had done the day before. And he's banging on the window, waving the cops out, looking over his shoulder. I mean, this went on for probably 10 or 15 seconds until Maxim Gelman decided to start walking back up towards the door. So with that, the second guy sees him walking. He hightails it back next to me, and I'm wondering what the hell is going on here. And the gentleman approaches the door. He's about 3 feet from the door, about 2 feet from me. He looks down at me. I look up at him. He takes out an 8-inch knife and says, "You're going to die, you're going to die." And he plunges it right into my face, right under my left eye. So this is where I said I had a decision to make at the time, and I decided I was going to fight back. And I went and I shot for his legs. I was going for a single leg takedown. I actually ended up wrapping myself around his waist, so it was more like a football tackle. And I was able to take him down, but while I was taking him down, he stabbed me in the head 3 times. And like really deep cuts and everything, but I was able to take him down. Now I was on top of him trying to get the knife away from him. I mean, I'm a lot bigger than he is, and I just took this guy down on a hard subway floor, and he still had the knife in his hand. I mean, he was loaded, and he was trying to kill me, and so I got him down, and he's still flailing up at me with that knife, and I'm trying to grab it with my left hand. He's right-handed. And I missed the first time, and he slices me in the thumb, basically where that webbing is that connects your thumb to your hand. Second time, he swelled up at me. He sliced me in the tricep. Finally, the third time he did it, I was able to grab his wrist. I slammed it down. The knife came out. And right then and there is when I got the tap on the shoulder, and I was told by the officer, "You can get up now. We got him." So that was the fight on the train, and the officer stayed in the motorman's compartment behind the locked steel door until the fun was over. I guess they were afraid, and once I did the dirty work, and they wanted to come out and get the glory.
Yeah, we got them. Right? Yeah, we got them. Or they have mice in their pocket. These freaking guys. I did a lot of wrong when I was with the NYPD, but I was still an NYPD cop. And Scoop, you know, he was transit, right? Something, right?
Yeah. Well, Scoop. I was NYPD too, but Transit Bureau.
So, yeah, like what Joe is saying, is not SOP for transit officers. They board the train. They usually board the train in the middle of the what they call a consist. You have 10 cars. That way you have a clear view up and throughout the entire train car. And then when the train goes around a curve, you can see what's going on. So I don't know what – these cops just sound like two S-bags.
Both
bags of
What I found out later was they did what they did because they had received word that Gelman was in the tunnel. Because what he was doing was he was jumping from train to train. So they were in the front of the train going slow because they had heard he was in the tunnel. Not that I'm defending them. I'm just telling you that's what they were doing up there. And, you know, so that was it. I don't know if – I don't think there were other cops on the actual subway at the time on that consist because – it took a while for other officers to get there once everything was done. So I think they were the only two on that train. I mean, I would imagine it was an APB big time that day, and they put hundreds of officers down on all different subway lines that day. But that's why they were in with the motorman.
Okay.
Wow.
And, you know, you're wrestling around on the floor with this character, and the knife is gone, and you get a tap on the shoulder. That, you know, it's over. You know, we got them. And, you know, they cuff them up. And you're bleeding like a stuck pig, like a five-time stuck pig.
Yeah.
You know, I can't fathom what was going through your mind when you felt that heat of your own blood coming out of your face and your head. You know, give me a gunfight anytime. But what you did with this guy with this knife is just miraculous. How it turned out, it was miraculous.
I am very lucky. I tell anyone who listened that I'm very lucky. I do believe someone was watching out for me that day. You know, he any number of things, I could end up dead. I mean, he stabs me a couple of more inches up. Maybe the knife goes through my eye, gets me in the brain. If he stabbed me any lower or on my head, maybe towards my neck. Maybe he stabbed me in the spinal cord. So there's so many things that could have gone wrong that day. And it sounds weird to say, yeah, I was stabbed 7 times and I almost bled out, but I'm lucky. But that's how I look at it. And Walter, honestly, while I'm sitting there watching my life pour out of me for upwards of 20, 25 minutes while we're not moving at all I thought about was my family. And I think people sometimes, I don't know if they actually believe me, but really, my whole life is focused around my wife and my kids. And what really bothered me, and that was I figured that I was going to die on that train, and that morning was going to be the last time I would ever see them. And that's the God's honest truth. I just wanted off that train because I didn't want that subway car to be my coffin.
Totally understandable. Totally understandable. And, you know, then the ambulance showed up, and they finally moved the train. They got you out. And EMTs, they did you right, did they not? They did you correct.
Yeah, everybody involved that day, with the exception of the police officers and the captain and the mayor, were great. The EMTs, they were unbelievable. You know, I was probably rambling a lot in the ambulance because I guess in my head I'm thinking that the more I talk, maybe there's a better chance of staying awake. And I remember telling them, just please talk to me, keep me awake. And I had asked them about, you know, painkillers and morphine and everything. And, you know, we had a conversation about that, and they basically said, don't worry, they're ready for you at the hospital. They got the IV going. And, as soon as we get there, they're going to load you up on it, which they did. So, the paramedics were wonderful. The doctors, everyone was great that day. Like I said, with the exception of a few people.
How many staples?
Staples were, I'm going to say, upwards of 30. Two of the wounds were longer than the third one. Out of the 7 wounds, six required, all 6 of 7 got stitches. 3 of 7 got staples. One could have gotten stitches, but they said maybe it was like a 2-stitch wound. And I said, don't even worry about that one. So I think stitches wise was well over 100. I mean, it could have been, you know, 150. I don't know. But I actually, it's funny, years later, I said to Andrea, I said, I never asked about the staples, and I went back and I looked at the pictures, and I actually just counted them, and I think it was between 25 and 30 staples. Yeah. So, yeah.
And the people that are listening to our show tonight, I got to tell you, you know, when Joe and I had dinner, you could see them scars, man. You could see them. He can't, because, well, he could see a couple of them, but he can't see them all. And because, you know, they're on the back of his head, the side of his head, behind his ear. But, you know, he knows they're there, and he knows how much they hurt. And we're going to come back after this last break, Joe, and we're going to wind it up in the book.
Okay.
Scoop, take us out.
Yep. Stay tuned, everybody.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yuku. I mean, Walter Yurkow. I mean, Walter Kiwi. Here's Walton Scoop.
And we are back. I can't believe we made it to the last segment with our guest Joe Lozito, just telling a harrowing story. But, Walt, take it away. Let's find out what happened at the end of this tale of woe.
Okay, well, I'm just going to guess Joe was busy with the EMTs and on his way to the hospital to get stitched up and get his life saved. Perp was taken into custody, you know, and dragged down to whatever precinct was the closest. And you know, it turned out that he got four life sentences for the murders, plus about 700 million years for the stabbings and the spree killing. And he'll never get out of prison. You know, it's 10 years ago. He was 28. He's 38. And I guarantee you, he's still not smart. He may be somebody's bitch up there, I hope. Because he thought he was, you know, I thought he thought he was a tough guy. He wasn't part of the Russian mafia because the Ukrainians have their own thing. Believe me, I know. I'm Ukrainian. And he wasn't part of any of that. Not that I was either, but he wasn't part of it because he was such a psycho, you know, a guy that, you know, thought minute to minute. That does not make a good soldier. Joe's at the hospital, and, you know, I can't imagine what would go through Andrea's mind, you know, when she got a call. Did you call her? Did somebody else call her?
Well, the detective that was in the hospital with me, he called her, but we usually don't pick up numbers we don't know. So when he called her a few times, mm-hmm. and she was working that morning, she didn't pick up the phone. I said, you know what, let me have my phone because she doesn't know your number. She's not going to pick up. And when I called her, I started telling her, and, you know, I'm like a lot of guys, I have weird senses of humor. And I think when I first started telling her, she thought I was full of crap. She thought I was lying. So I was just having fun with her. And finally I just said, look, we got to take a deep breath here. And I told her, and then I felt all the life go out of her, and I heard her screaming. And that was tough for me. That's actually, for me, it's the toughest part of the story because I had to call my wife and tell her, and she had to drive up from Philadelphia with my kids, who were 10 and 8 at the time. And the three of them don't know what they're walking into. They only know that I've been in a knife fight and I didn't have a knife. So that's actually the toughest part of the story for me is not being there for them, because the whole time for me was nerve wracking. So, it was horrible making that phone call, that's for sure.
And, you know, I think it would have been good protocol had the NYPD gone through Philly police. And while you're on the phone, you know, have a Philly detective show up at the house and drive her into the city. You know, that would have been a good protocol.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
It was a mess that morning. You know, your morning went from, went from zero to 175, you know, without being in a race car. It was just an unbelievable story. And
can I point out
absolutely.
One thing?
Yeah.
It's very important for me. As much as Terrence Howell is a coward and everything, there was one person on the train that really helped me out. He was a civilian, and his name's Alfred Douglas. And Alfred Douglas is my hero. He's my hero that day. He's the one that he came in, and he didn't know me. He doesn't know what's in my blood. He doesn't know if I have AIDS or anything like that. But he basically put his bare hand on my deepest wound back there to try to stem the bleeding. And he stayed with me the whole time until the paramedics got there. So I'm the only one. NYPD never acknowledges him. Nobody ever acknowledges Alfred Douglas, but Alfred Douglas is to me the real hero that day, and I always try to mention him in every interview that I do.
Sounds like somebody sent him to be your guardian angel that morning.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
There's not too many things in this life that gives me chills or give me goosebumps or make my eyes water up. But, you know, your story is one of the few that do that to me. You know, it's an emotional story. You know, I met you, and you are a gentle giant. You're a gentle man.
It takes one to know one, right?
Well, yeah. But we, you know, when it comes down to, you know, spitting and fighting, we fight. We don't spit. And it's just unbelievable how the emotion and you know, intuition takes over. For, you know, survival. And you did it, you did it not only for yourself, but, you know, while you're fighting with these guys, whether you realize it or not, you know, your family was right there in the forefront. That you might never see them again if this guy gets me in the throat, if this guy gets me in the chest.
100%.
You know, you just don't know when this is going to happen. You know, Hollywood can't make this kind of stuff up because you can see it coming if you're watching a movie. You had no clue that this guy killed four people and cut up another half a dozen before he ran into you. And thank God, you know, you were the last. And, you know, had he done you in, God forbid, had he done you in, who knows how many people on that train he would have took out. I could just picture. Now, listen to this. I could just picture the two cops in that motorman's car looking at each other and looking at the motorman. And the motorman saying, dude, that ain't me. That's you guys. And these two guys going rock, paper, scissors. Who's going to go out first? You know, it's just unimaginable that you, out of 35,000 cops on the city in New York City in 1990, you got the only two that tucked their tails between their legs.
Yeah,
and that's a shame. And I know Howell got an award for being a hero, you know, above and beyond the call, and just. It's a shame. Would I have a beer with the guy? Yeah, I probably would. You probably would, too. As long as you don't talk about what happened February 12th, 2011.
That might be difficult. There are a few people in the world I don't think I could sit down with. I think he's in that small group.
Yeah, the beer would not taste really well. But, it might be hard to get down. But, Joe, Joe's got a book out. Now, I read, Joe gave me a personal copy. He signed it to me. He wrote a little note inside that I'm going to keep to myself between him and I. But I have my own personal copy. And I read the book. It's a good read for anybody. I advertised it on the pre-show. I posted a copy of the his book on the cover of it, the New York City Subway Hero. And anybody out there listening, Google it, find it, read it. It is a good, solid read. It needs to be made into a movie. It really does. The documentaries are many. There's got to be at least three or four that I know of about your story. It needs to be a movie. It needs to show the human emotion. It needs to show the guts and the lack of glory that Joe has gone through. It needs to show Max's upbringing and what brought him to it. It needs to show Joe's personal life before it happened. And then the climax is, of course, you know, the subway confrontation. I think it would be a good human interest movie. I really do, Joe. I really do.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm all for it. If Hollywood comes a knocking, I'll be here ready to answer the door, especially now since I've been out of work since May.
I believe J-Lo may be available to play Andrea, you know.
She could play me, I guess. I don't know. But, when Andrea and I first started dating, a lot of people said she looked like Alicia Silverstone. So I don't know what she's doing, but hey, man, you know, like, I really appreciate all your kind words. Honestly, I say it all the time. It's people like yourself and, you know, everybody that's ever reached out with kind words and notes and emails and everything. It really helps me get through the day. You know, I really appreciate that. So, you know, if people want to buy the book, it's on Amazon, or they can reach out to me on social media. I'll send you signed copies. You can get it right from me if you want. But I think it's a pretty good book. I wrote it. Myself. I did everything myself. So there was no publishing company that was interested in it. And so everything is done right from me. It's 100% me from my heart and from my head.
God bless you, Joe Lazzio. God bless you and your family, your two boys. And, you know, I hope you never have to face anything like this ever again. And, you know, I wish you all the best. I'm sorry that, you know, you haven't been working since May. I know New York City is a crap hole right now with shutting everything down. And, you know, de Blasio has really screwed things up. So is Cuomo. And I call him now Cuckoo Cuomo. he said in the post the other day, I believe, that they were going to die anyway. So that's another story maybe next week. Joe, yep. God bless you. We got to do it again sometime.
Thanks, guys. Anytime, just let me know.
Our pleasure, Joe. Anyways, for Walter Yerkew and Joe Zito, this is Peter Scoop Stanton. Remind everybody, you can make a difference. Go out and make it. Stay safe. See you next week, everybody.
James Edwards for 7-5 Radio. For those who work the streets and the jails, thanks for keeping us safe. So long, everybody.